Welcome to the Generations Radio broadcast, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson, Executive Director for Christian Home Educators, also a pastor and a father. I'm broadcasting from my basement deep in the woods of Elbert County, Colorado. Also, Dave Buhner with me, and we're just sitting here looking at the demise of Western civilization from a safe distance here. And you know, Dave, socialist governments everywhere are trying to salvage their fractional reserve systems. It's just incredible. The dominoes have really been hitting one another, and they're tumbling like crazy all over the world. It's incredible what this World Academy is doing now. Remember what John Maynard Keynes said? In the long run, we're all dead. John Maynard Keynes being the father of the modern fractional reserve system.
He's dead.
He's dead, too, yeah.
He's dead. And now it's the long run.
And now we're dying. And now it's the long run, and we're dying, my friends. And let me make this really simple for everybody out there. Lending more money than you have is a really bad policy. Okay, now that's Kevin Swanson's basic economic principle. If you lend more money than you have in your bank or whatever, if you're a bank, you're lending more money than you have in the bank, that's a really bad policy. Because at some point, the piper invoices. You know, it may be about time to pay the piper, Dave.
I think they were hoping the piper would die in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah, but you've got European governments now trying to bail out their failing institutions. India's government. Even India was affected by this. They're pumping in cash into a bank that was seeing a huge run, second largest run in their history. Also, Ireland's government agreed to guarantee payments on all $563 billion in bank debt, which is twice the country's GDP. I got to thinking, that's a lot of money. That Irish government must have a tremendous amount of money stashed in their closets, you know. $563 billion stashed in the closet, twice their GDP. That's incredible.
That is incredible. Maybe they have a lot of ink and paper, and they can print some more later. Or
probably it, yeah. Just crank up the printing presses. I guess you can always buy a couple more.
You can always inflate the currency, and that seems to be what the fallback position is. Right now, the world economy is so intertwined. If the United States falls, Russia will fall. China will fall, because they depend on us as customers and providers and so forth. So everybody is interested in seeing this socialist government continue, because nobody knows how to become unsocialist once they've become socialist.
Oh, yeah, Dave, and it's amazing how quickly these socialist governments rush in to rescue the failing economic system that was failing because everybody got greedy because they found out they could lend way more money than they have in the bank. And then eventually the piper invoiced. So now the government steps in to try to save the situation, and it's just going to be more of the same, Dave. I mean, this might just extend the decline of these economic systems another 5-10 years. I'm not a prophet here. I don't know what's going to happen, but you know, from where I stand, if you start to dissolve the money supply and dilute the value of money, inevitably nations fall when that happens. And you look over 3,000-4,000 years of world history, all the way from Rome and Spain and other nations, you find an every single case, when they began to water down the money system, those economic systems failed, and those empires came crashing down.
And, of course, that's nearly impossible to do with coins of precious metals. Now, people would shave them and then mix in other metals and stuff like that. Basically, they would move towards sort of a paper currency. But it's much easier to do with a paper currency, because all you have to do is get out the printing press and print out more money.
Yeah.
There's plenty to go around.
Hard to say what the exit strategy is going to be for these severe economic times that are spreading across the entire world. But, you know, Dave, one exit strategy is a massive war. I mean, that's been used in time past. Nations can get out from under some of these economic strains by just killing a lot of people.
Well, it focuses your economy towards a goal and your people towards a goal, and you end up with less people and more resources in the end. So it's one way to do it. Some civilization will fall. Maybe it'll be Germany, or maybe it'll be China, or maybe it'll be the Arab world, but somebody's going to fall and somebody's going to win, and the winner gets the spoils. And so, you know, to those who think they can win, it has some appeal.
Well, we'll see what happens. Hey, by the way, you might have heard, Dave, that Katie Couric interviewed Sarah Palin, and she was not real nice with her.
No. Katie wasn't as perky as she had been in the past with other guests, say. Yeah, she didn't ask her like she did Obama when he was going to walk on the water next or something like that. It was disappointing. I actually saw portions of the interview, and I was quite disappointed in the governor's answers and responses. I didn't think she answered with principle as much as I would have liked. But then I'm not representing the whole
just
people
a lot
of the United States.
A lot of wishy-washiness.
I think she Well, for instance, something that we hoped for a very strong and definitive principled answer was on abortion. Katie, of course, went to the most horrific example. If you had a father who raped his daughter and the daughter was pregnant because of it, you know, this is the strategy of the liberals. You know, would you tell that girl she couldn't have an abortion?
Would you murder the child and rip apart its arms and legs and take out its chest cavity and then experiment with it in a scientific lab?
Katie didn't ask it that way.
Oh, she didn't. Okay.
Would you punish the child by forcing her to have a baby? Obama speak. And, you know, I would have preferred something like, no, you don't murder the innocent because somebody else did something horrible. You actually, it's better to go after the bad guys and to preserve life, but murder doesn't make the crime go away.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Dave. Maybe the way that they answer these questions is to try to attract the moderate wishy-washy vote. Evidently, there's a lot of mealy-mouthed voters out there that would just love to vote for the most mealy-mouthed candidate they can find. And maybe that's why Palin goes for that vote, voting base,
in
these interviews.
Well, she is the vice president of John McCain. Now, in politics, it's been understood for a long time that you have those who are diehard liberals, and they're going to vote Democrat, and you have those who are diehard conservatives, and they're going to vote Republican because they got nowhere else to go. And the winner is the one who will get most of the votes of the middle. And to be in the middle, you're basically a person without principle. Because if you had principle one way or the other, you would move to either to the left or to the right. So what she's trying to do is get some votes from that middle. That's been John McCain's strategy from the beginning. You know, he's a Republican, but he likes to do battle with Republicans, so he can appeal to both the Republicans and the Democrats. This is the strategy. This has been employed through decades of elections, and this is the strategy that John McCain has put in force.
That's just why Cork asked her about what newspaper she reads, just to figure out whether she had a brain.
Yeah, Katie asked her where she got her worldview, what news sources. And again,
just to make sure she still has a brain.
Make sure she's reading the right stuff. If she'd said she got a worldview from the Bible, I'm sure there would have been a follow-up.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Or if she said she got it from John MacArthur or something like that. Again, I was disappointed in the answer. Sarah tried to turn it around and say that Katie was diminishing Alaska, that they're somehow the backward hicks and didn't get news sources and didn't get the Internet and maybe not even CBS, which, of course, would make you less of a backward hick. Again, I was disappointed in Sarah.
How would you answer that, Dave?
Well, I think Sarah should have said, well, we get the New York Times. We use it for fish wrap. My husband's a commercial fisherman.
So it comes in handy. Sure, there's a use there.
Mm-hmm. We watch Al Jazeera from time to time, and then we watch CBS, and we want to see where CBS is making up their news from.
Yeah, sure. To make sure you know where CBS is pulling its sources.
You remember CBS was the network of Dan Rather.
Right.
The it's not genuine but true memo.
Yeah.
I think she could have commented that she prefers, though, to get a lot of news from different sources, especially those sources that still have some belief that there is something called truth and ethics in journalism.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a good answer to Katie.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, in just a moment, we're going to talk about who we're going to vote for president of the United States. Are we being too perfectionistic on this radio station? I think some folks out there are saying, yes, I have a pretty high standard. Man alive. Aren't you going to vote for anybody? Be back in just a moment to talk about who we're voting for in the 2008 elections. Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio Program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org.
And we're back on the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you, also Dave Buhner, a couple of dads in the studio, sitting here wondering what to do for the 2008 elections. And Dave, you know, I think some people think we're a little perfectionistic. You know, when it comes down to it, I think our manner of voting has a lot to do with where we think things are at any given point in time. And right now, I don't think we're in very good shape. And if you got a moderate candidate out there that's not going to stand strong on principle, we just wonder if he has what it takes to turn this Titanic around. I mean, if you're electing a very conservative captain on the Titanic and you know you've got problems, are you going to elect the guy who's most concerned about the fuel usage? You know, how many miles per gallon they're getting on the Titanic as they're moving ahead, and he's going to be very conservative with that. Or do we need somebody who's going to be addressing some more fundamental issues and be willing to do what it takes to turn this Titanic around?
Well, Kevin, as you know, I've examined the major party candidates fairly closely and rigorously, and I've come up with a conclusion. I know what we should do.
What's that, Dave?
Pray. Pray.
That's a great idea. In fact, actually, it's commanded in the Word of God. So is it 1 Timothy chapter 2 where Paul says you got to pray for those in power, those kings and rulers that rule over you? And that's exactly right. I mean, that you cannot go wrong with that. And that may be even more important. So if you have a choice, you only have so much time on election day. You could vote or pray. You couldn't do both on that particular day. I'd say pray. Prayer is probably the number one priority.
Absolutely. Yeah. Both parties are not putting forth candidates of principle.
Yeah.
Even the more conservative party, and that's hard to tell in this case, what is the more conservative party?
Yeah.
Normally you would think that would be the Republicans, but John McCain has been against free speech in the past. He was for CAFE standards. He's somehow socialist light. You just don't know where the guy is going to go, where he's going to take the country, based on his record. Not his speeches, based on his record.
And George W. Bush now has the reputation of being the highest spender in the history of the nation. He has increased the size of government by far more than any other president, including FDR and LBJ, who, of course, were Democrats. So you're sitting here looking at Republican president, George W. Bush, and thinking to yourself, now that's conservative. Okay, that's conservative. If that's conservative, what's John McCain? You know, was John McCain going to be even less conservative than the biggest spender in the history of the nation? You know, like, I guess all these questions are rattling around my brain, and I wonder if I could really count on John McCain in the area of life. I mean, granted, he has some good votes in the area of life, and yet he did not vote right on the stem cell issue and other things. So you just wonder if this man's going to stand on principle, or is he going to be the moderate, and he's going to be sort of moderating the amount of fuel used by the Titanic as it heads towards the iceberg, or is this man going to do what it takes to turn this ship around?
And I think that's a real problem. One word I'm not hearing at all in this election cycle is the word Constitution. It's amazing that we don't ever talk about what the Constitution says when we're talking about government
and
policy.
Moot. It's moot, Dave. It's moot. They could care less about the Constitution. The Constitution, of course, at one time being somewhat of a standard by which it would hold back the quest for power on the part of our representatives. But anymore, it is not that, and they'll do everything they can to violate the Constitution and the restrictions the Constitution has on each of the particular arms or branches of government. So, Dave, again, I think it has a lot to do. Our perspective, folks, has a lot to do with where we are. We perceive things as being in trouble. I mean, we're in economic trouble. We're in political trouble. We're losing our freedoms. The family is in decline, serious decline. And, Dave, you had Michelle Obama today at CU Boulder talking about how important it was to, you know, for the government to come in and, through its policies, continue to molest the family, I mean, protect the family. And I can't see the government doing that. I mean, I don't see any of our leaders talking about the kind of policies it's going to take to salvage the family here in America.
And once again, I ask, where would we find such a role for the government in our Constitution? Because the Constitution, now, I'm kind of older than a lot of the people listening here, but when I was in high school, we were told that the Constitution was the highest law of the land, only under God's law.
Yeah. I mean, my guess is Michelle Obama is delighted that we have 37% of children born without fathers, 70% of black children born without fathers, half of marriages ending in divorce. My guess is she loves the fact that the family has been decimated in America and the public schools and the compulsory attendance laws and everything else and the welfare programs are out there doing everything they can possibly do to destroy the family and have been doing that for the last 75 years. Now, that's the policies of the people who are taking the Titanic into the iceberg. I don't like those policies. I think we ought to change those policies. And I can't see that even John McCain's going to do that.
Well, I'm not sure that John McCain meets what we would call the qualifications for a leader of the civil magistrate, namely a man who fears God, who hates covetousness, who's a man of the truth. I don't see those things from John McCain. Now, I think he's probably a man of the truth, near as I can tell, but maybe not. But he loves covetousness, and that is, he likes to accumulate power. But I don't hear a lot of fearing God coming out of John McCain. I hear a little bit of God out of Sarah Palin, but I don't hear fear of God coming out of Sarah Palin.
All right, Dave, I want to talk a little bit about Chuck Baldwin from the Constitution Party. As you know, Dave, I ran for the Constitution Party for U.S. Senate here in Colorado some 6-7 years ago, and some 14 years ago, I ran for governor of this state. And, you know, Dave, one of the indications that you know you're in a really bad, bad shape is when you can't even find a dog catcher to run for president of the United States, a man who's got the experience of working as a dog catcher, who has the principles that we share and the principles that we believe could be the principles upon which this nation could be refounded and reestablished. We can't even find a dog catcher who shares these principles who could run for president of the United States right now. So we have to go with guys like Kevin Swanson and Chuck Baldwin, who have no experience whatsoever in the civil magistrate.
You've caught a dog.
I have caught a dog, but I was never elected dog catcher. Okay, Dave? A slight difference there. So again, I was very pro-life, you know, in all my perspectives, and I think I shared a lot of the perspectives that very conservative candidates like Chuck Baldwin have as they run for president of the United States. But here's a man, Chuck Baldwin. Nobody knows who he is. We don't really know much about him. We don't know if he's an able man. We don't know if he's a man of truth. We don't know if he's a man of principle in the sense that he has never held a political office. Now, I held a political office in California. I was student body president over 17,000 students, probably slightly larger than the town that Sarah Palin was mayor of some 2-3 years ago. All right, so I did have some experience, and my experience showed that I was pro-family, and I maintained a basically biblical perspective as I sat there and made decisions concerning policies as student body president of a major West Coast university. But again, Dave, I just don't think people could really trust me because they didn't know me. I didn't have much experience. I was just a nobody running for governor of the state of Colorado in 1994. The same thing is happening with Chuck Baldwin. So we're in bad shape. I'm not saying that Chuck Baldwin shouldn't run for president of the United States. I'm just saying we're in really, really bad shape when the only guy you can find who's a pretty solid, principled man who has the guts to run for president of the United States is some no-name guy from, where is it, Alabama, where he serves as a pastor of a church. Much like I do, I guess, here out in Colorado. It'd be like me running for president. You know, this guy's a radio announcer and a pastor. I'm a radio announcer and a pastor. Maybe I should run for president of the United States.
Maybe you should. Maybe you should run under the name None of the Above, and I'll bet you'd be a challenger.
I might win. I'd come in second, at least.
You might come in first if you named yourself None of the Above. You might just win this thing.
You got to admit, Dave, though, the nation's in bad shape when you can't find a man of principle to run who's got any political experience whatsoever. It's pretty incredible.
It is bad, and I think it's sort of systemic that it's difficult to become a governor and be a principled person. It's difficult to be a congressman and be a principled person, largely because of the way that we raise citizens through the public schools and the values that people are taught. You have to transform a people in a smaller jurisdiction, a local jurisdiction, first in order to get those kinds of leaders.
And here's a couple of Baldwin's positions. I just grabbed this off his website this afternoon. Here he says, if I were president, I would disband the Department of Education. And I'm liking that. That's a great idea, especially after Bush has increased the size of the Department of Education 300%, Dave, on its budget since he was nominated or since he was elected president in 2000.
Again, where's the constitutional authority for Department of Education?
Yeah,
there is none.
You're not going to find it, no. Second Amendment, according to Chuck Baldwin on the Second Amendment, to help keep your family safe and your country free, go buy a gun. He's pro-gun all the way. Foreign policy, a free and sovereign republic, not a world empire. We will stop this international meddling, this international empire building. When Chuck Baldwin is sworn in as president of these United States, the new world order comes crashing down. Says the same thing about the United Nations. When I am president of these United States, all funding for the United Nations stops. Health care. I strongly support the freedom of choice of practitioner and treatment for all citizens for their health care. And I would assume that he's not for socialist health care. I mean, it doesn't say that, but I would assume he's not for it. National defense. We will have a national defense that is second to none, with armed forces that serve only under our flag, whose mission is to defend these United States of America. And there's nothing there, I guess,
for anybody to really disagree with, especially if you're somewhat conservative and a Republican. Here on Sanctity of Life, I will use the bully pulpit of the presidency to demand that Congress enact Dr. Ron Paul's Sanctity of Life Act, which would set forth that every unborn child is a person under the Constitution entitled to equal protection of the law, and therefore no unborn child could be killed without due process of law. So he likes the Sanctity of Life Act that Dr. Ron Paul put together and would like to see that pass through the Congress.
And, of course, those are all wonderful positions. I like them all. I wonder how he would implement some of them. You know, part of it is not just having a position. It's being able to implement a position. And I think that goes to the qualification is he able? You have to win a consensus. You have to push legislation through. And at times you have to use that big red veto pen over and over and over again and take the flack that comes from the press.
Again, Dave, it's really hard to know how consistent Dr. Chuck Baldwin is going to be on issues like life and homosexuality and taxes and all these different things, unless he has already served as a congressman or something of that sort, where he has a voting record, and we can tell whether or not the man is a man of principle against, you know, all challenges. The man's going to stand for principle. So, again, we don't really know these things. But let me say this, Dave. I really think what we need to do is not be totally perfectionistic. We have to understand there are some candidates that are going to run who may be good on life, may be good on issues like taxes, but not so hot, as far as we're concerned, on immigration. I mean, there may be a candidate that isn't really batting a thousand. And I don't think anybody here in the studio is saying that somebody's got to be perfect before they serve as president of the United States or the pastor of your church or anything of that sort. I think we're just looking for somebody who basically fears God. Okay, that's basic. That's so incredibly basic. 2 Samuel 23 and verse 2, as I recall, David says there on his deathbed, anybody who rules among men must rule in the fear of God. So, you know, that's King David speaking on an inspiration of the Spirit back in 2 Samuel 23. I think the fear of God is absolutely essential, which means, I think, Dave, we've got to go to God's Word and determine the sorts of things that God says are important. I don't think immigration is a big issue, for example. I allow some wiggle room on issues like that. But when it comes to the shedding of innocent blood or the issue of homosexuality, God has destroyed pagan nation states for those sorts of sins. So those are major issues in God's eyes, and I think we ought to make sure that our representatives, those that we elect, have a very strong position that's based on biblical morality in issues like life and homosexuality.
And something like immigration becomes a bigger problem, becomes a bigger issue when you're also stealing from your citizenry in order to pay for social programs. In other words, you're violating another commandment, and that exacerbates the problem. If we just had a bunch of people coming here to work and we didn't have labor laws, we didn't have minimum wage laws, immigration would be no problem whatsoever. But the fact that you're giving them free education and free health care and they're driving without insurance and then there's a whole bunch of criminals coming across, this makes that a bigger issue. So what we're asking is there enough fear of God to follow his commandments? Now, we might disagree on some of the applications of those commandments, but we at least ought to be trying to apply them and not ignoring God's law.
The beginning of wisdom and knowledge is the fear of God. That's the very foundation, folks, of rebuilding our families, our churches, our schools, and our nation. That's where it starts. It starts with teaching the fear of God as the beginning of wisdom and knowledge, and I would hope that we elect good leaders that really do fear God. Folks, I hope you're not discouraged by listening to our radio program. We actually think there's great hope for this nation. That's why we broadcast on this radio station. We think there's hope for future generations. That's why we call the program Generations, because we think our children are going to still be around, and we have a vision for those generations. And I have summarized a vision for this nation, for this nation's future, in The Second Mayflower. And it's the third edition of this book. It's a hardback edition. I would encourage you to get this vision, and hopefully it will inspire a great deal of hope in you for the future of this nation. I don't think God has done yet with our nation. And you can get a copy of my book, The Second Mayflower, by going to our website, kevinswanson.com, and just click on Resources. Ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with this radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com, where you can pick up our resources and check out my blog. That's kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.